The countdown has begun. From May 14th to 16th, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections, gain unique insights, and uncover valuable opportunities in one of the world's most rapidly rising regions. Request your invite for this exclusive event at QatarEconomicForum.com.
I'm Stacey Marie Ishmael, Managing Editor of Crypto for Bloomberg News. And this is Bloomberg Crypto, a daily Bloomberg iHeart podcast. It's Wednesday, August 10th.
NFTs.
A non-fungible token, largely digital art.
NFTs. What is the actual use case of these decentralized assets?
At the height of NFT mania, everyone from athletes like Tom Brady to celebrities like Justin Bieber seemed to be either buying or talking about buying collections like Bored Ape Yacht Club. Non-fungible tokens aren't just pictures of monkeys, though, even if that's how most people understand them. They exist on the blockchain, and buying or selling them typically requires paying in some kind of cryptocurrency, like Ether. But while the link between NFT prices and the prices of tokens like Ether isn't always straightforward, it's true that NFTs haven't been entirely spared from the chill of this current crypto winter. For more on NFTs and how and whether they're holding up these days, I'm joined by Bloomberg reporter Pratana Prakash.
NFTs fundamentally, I mean, if we go back to the definition, is about a certificate of ownership.
Pratana, welcome.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
It's an absolute pleasure. We're going to talk about NFTs.
Mm-hmm.
Why are we going to talk about NFTs? What's happening?
Well, it is the hot topic. It has been for a while, so there's just a lot to unpack over there. So I'm excited to talk about it.
Excellent. I was reading your story that you wrote for Bloomberg Quick Take, which I'd love for you to just tell our listeners a little bit more about what that franchise is. And a couple of things jumped out at me that we will talk about. So, you know, for sure, I want to hear your perspective on average NFT prices, how they're doing compared to the broader crypto market in this so-called crypto winter that we like to talk about on the podcast. And then, you know, just a little bit of where prices are holding up, what that might be about, right? Is it that there is this base of buyers that really have strong conviction in NFTs? Is there something else going on with tokens? So we'll get into all those things. Tell me more about what Quick Take is.
Right. So Quick Take are an explanatory type of, I guess, the pieces that we do at Bloomberg, which aims to unpack some of the bigger concepts, things that are happening in the world or words that we end up seeing a lot in the news but don't entirely understand.
Mm-hmm.
So Quick Take helps break that down and explain it all from scratch, just so you understand. And so there's no jargon there. There's no complications. You just take what it is and digest it in more palatable language.
As you were reporting this out, given everything that you've just said, what was like the hardest thing for you to explain about how NFTs work?
Probably the Bored Apes, because I'm still struggling to understand what it's all about. And I think that's what the whole crypto world and the world of NFTs, that's what it's been. I mean, it's been a lot of explaining and it's been a lot of redefining at various points in time. So yeah, it was quite a learning for me as well.
Now, when you talk about Bored Apes, so what we're talking about here is Bored Ape Yacht Club, which is probably still one of the single most successful, definitive, coveted, choose your adjective here, collection of non-fungible tokens ever to have been created. What about these NFTs in particular were so interesting to people? Like, were they expensive? Were they rare? Were they exclusive? Was it some combination?
It was exclusive, and it was also something so different that people had never kind of seen before. We saw a lot of celebrities buy into this trend. And what happens is when you see a lot of public personalities take to NFTs, it somehow lends it a legitimacy that everyone wants to be in on as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess a combination of those things and just this access to a more exclusive club just created a sense of hype, because the moment you buy a Bored Ape, you get access to a Discord server specifically for members of this Bored Ape Yacht Club.
And a Discord server is like video game Slack.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's how I think of it anyway.
Yeah, that's how I think of it as well. I think I can't imagine what must be going on in that chat, but that's the closest I can think of. But yeah, I think this whole sense of an exclusive access or special ownership is what got a lot of people interested in it.
But what do you actually own?
You own the animation of the Bored Ape. So you get to customize it however you want. Maybe put a blonde wig on the ape, or color the skin differently, or whatever it is that you want to do with it. But you just own the animation of that, and that's pretty much it.
So is the NFT the ape, or is it the right to own the ape?
I want to say both, because NFT is fundamentally, I mean, if we go back to the definition, it's about a certificate of ownership. I guess that's the easiest way to put it. It's the ownership to that ape, I guess, in this particular context. But if we talk about it more broadly, it's the certificate of ownership for any work of art, maybe even a tweet sometimes. That's what you're really paying the price for.
Which is interesting, because one of the, in the sort of the earlier days of Bored Ape, there were people who were trying to figure out, do they own the rights to this particular print, or do they actually own the underlying intellectual property of that ape? Would they be allowed to, say, turn that ape into a movie, or, you know, as a character, or print a line of t-shirts associated with it? And I think when we're talking about NFTs, one of the things that's always important is to remember that these are, in addition to being apes, in addition to being certificates of authenticity or ownership, they're also contracts. And so with contracts, you have, you know, parties to an understanding, buyer, seller, creator, recipient, and then a bunch of jargon that defines what you as the person who owns or has made that thing can actually do with that thing at the end of it. Have you found that people understand all of the legalese that is sometimes associated with these things?
Maybe there's a fraction of people who do, but I think a majority of people probably don't.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a great deal of mob mentality attached to just this NFT market, because you see someone do it and then you see someone who's super famous do it and you want to do it as well. So I think that there's not a lot of thought into this sometimes. Of course, I want to completely credit all the investors who've thought about this and
Did their research
and wanted to diversify their portfolio and decided to invest in NFTs.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, there's a fair deal of buzz and just like social, you know, hype, as they put it. So I don't think everyone is completely educated about the legal technicalities of it.
Yeah, I'm just going to ask our listeners, if you are a person who owns an NFT and you have read all of the terms and conditions associated with that NFT, as well as the platform that you bought it on, please email us. I would be very interested in hearing from you and what that experience was like and how many years you spent in law school.
Definitely.
So if we were having this conversation 7 or 8 months ago, we would be talking about a very different vibe, right? We would be the beginning, maybe the middle of the hype cycle. There would be people showing up on Good Morning America or the Today Show talking about their NFTs. People would be trying to, like, your friends would be like, hey, check out this really cool collection and you can get into it super early. Now we're having a little bit of a different conversation. We're having a conversation where it's like, prices have come down. There's still a degree of enthusiasm, especially among like certain artists, certain creators, but the sort of, you know, Tom Brady with laser eyes pitching you on his NFT platform autograph energy of several months ago is not quite the same. What's been going on?
I think for this, we need to maybe rewind a little to the Terra Luna collapse. What do you mean?
make of what's happened with Terra and what it says about the future of quote-unquote stable?
I'm really curious about the responsibility of the Terra ecosystem now that so many people have lost money. Is it completely invest at your own will here, or are there going to be chances to recoup some of these losses in any fashion? Do they owe anything?
Price action, first of all. This is a very bumpy story that we're looking at here right now.
If it's a stable coin and it's not stable, what is
it? The real risk for this stable coin as it looks to shore up, it's pegged to the dollar, but the question is, does this stablecoin survive at the end?
I guess NFT was pretty much caught in that storm, and it didn't have an escape from there. And what that crash did, above all, was that it shook investor confidence because it was unprecedented, and it basically put the whole crypto system in jeopardy.
Or at least was perceived to put the whole crypto system in jeopardy because of that loss of confidence.
Yeah, definitely.
It was one of the first really big holy shit moments, where we're allowed to swear on the podcast, in this particular cycle of crypto. And what I mean by that is, you know, a lot of people who owned tokens, whether Luna, whether Terra, whether others, and NFTs, had not been in crypto a very long time, right? Like, these were folks who came into the space 3, maybe 5 years ago. They didn't have the memory of the previous time these things had happened. And so it really rattled a lot of people, and we're still dealing with the fallout. We'll be right back with more from Bloomberg reporter Pratana.
The countdown has begun. From May 14th to 16th, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum, powered by Bloomberg. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections, gain unique insights, and uncover valuable opportunities in one of the world's most rapidly rising regions. Request your invite for this exclusive event at QatarEconomicForum.com.
Now, the overall market has been in a pretty depressed state since then. In the aftermath of Terra Luna, we've had the blow up of the Three Arrows Capital hedge fund. There is a lot of scrutiny and attention right now around regulation, what's going to happen with some of the big exchanges. Various big players in the space have filed for bankruptcy or are generally distressed. So the vibes, you know, the vibes are a bit more stressed. Are NFTs moving in the same direction as everything else? Like, is there anything about this part of the ecosystem that is holding up or behaving differently?
Yeah, I think NFTs have definitely suffered a little bit of a blow given everything that's happening in the broader crypto space. But that being said, they're still not like rock bottom. They haven't hit rock bottom yet. You still see NFTs grow in spaces that had previously not been explored. I think more recently, we saw GameStop announce new marketplace for NFTs, which is, I guess, a new development and something that everyone is interested in knowing how that kind of grows.
Yes, especially because their timing was a little bit challenging for...
Definitely. And so that calls to question whether NFTs are going to see the same kind of downturn that cryptocurrencies have broadly seen.
Your story also mentioned the fact that OpenSea, which for a while was kind of the biggest, buzziest, most successful NFT marketplace, they were like kind of like an eBay for NFTs by volume, recently laid off 20% of their staff. You know, they said that they were generally making this decision to, in full awareness of market conditions. Give me an example of how market conditions are in NFTs right now. Like, how are prices? How are sales?
Yeah, so I think in June, sales were down 70%. On OpenSea, which, like you said, is one of the biggest marketplaces for NFTs. When we look at the floor price, it was almost down 79% specifically for the Bored Apes Yacht Club, which at one point was soaring at upwards of $400,000.
And when we talk about floor prices, we mean the kind of like the minimum listed price that something is currently available for sale. An NFT in this collection is available for sale.
That's right.
Got it. So if you were a person who bought at 300K and you were hoping to sell at 400K and now it's like, haha, it's worth 80K, you are having a very hard period.
Yeah, I can't imagine what they must be going through. But I do think they're holding on because there's hope. For NFTs, there may be hope.
On what basis? Like, where are people finding hope?
You see NFTs being adopted in a number of different spaces, whether that's the metaverse, you know, the all-famous metaverse, or gaming. We're also seeing a massive market in sports memorabilia. And so a lot of what we experience, anything that we see or can hold in our hands, can be made into an NFT today. The spaces that people can grow this market in, it just keeps expanding each time something new comes up.
That's certainly the pitch that we've heard. You know, we had Nicolas Julia, who is the CEO of So Rare, which does kind of fantasy sports with an NFT element on the platform.
We just believe that NFTs are the best fit for game items, but we don't see the word NFT in our product. Like, it's just the best technology.
We've spoken to the CEO of Royal, which is an NFT platform for musicians.
The most powerful aspect of it is, again, the ability to, you know, authenticate ownership of digital types of assets. And that's something that we really haven't seen in the past that we're going to see a lot of development in the future.
A lot of NFT CEOs we've interviewed, I'm finding. And they've said something very similar, which is that we're just at the beginning, right? And this latest collapse is more about a shakeout in some of the more speculative applications, maybe, or the applications that aren't necessarily about collecting or aren't necessarily about access to real world experiences in the way that you are describing it. Of course, they could all also be wrong. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this is certainly going to be one of those stories that we're just going to have to continue to pay attention to and see what happens.
Yeah, and I think that along with the collapse that we were talking about, one of the things that may have also factored in was just the number of frauds and scams and allegations of insider trading that was just being thrown around in this NFT and crypto space, mm-hmm. that I think was bound to eventually, yeah, just make investors reevaluate what they're putting their money into.
Terrific. Well, thank you so much for being on the pod, Pratana, and it is a pleasure to get to work with you.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
You can find more of Pratana's reporting on the Bloomberg Terminal, on Bloomberg.com, or on Twitter. She is at Prof Prakash. That is PrathPrakash. On the next episode of Bloomberg Crypto, NFTs really leapt into pop culture prominence in 2021, but they've been around since at least 2014. And despite current market conditions, which aren't great, new tokens and collections are still being launched every day, including by luxury brands like Gucci and Prada. Our next episode will feature a panel discussion that we recorded during the Bloomberg Live Crypto Summit that was held in New York in July. You'll hear from industry leaders like Avery Akineni of Vayner3, Helen High of Binance, and digital artist People Pleaser, sometimes known as Emily Yang. This is Bloomberg Crypto, a daily podcast from Bloomberg and iHeartRadio. For more shows from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Send us your comments, questions, or suggestions for the show to crypto@bloomberg.net. Or find us on Twitter, we're at crypto. The supervising producer of Bloomberg Crypto is Vicky Vergolina. Our senior producer is Janet Babin. Our producer is Sharon Bariro. Associate producer is Ty Butler. Desta Wonderad is our engineer. Original music by Leo Sidran. I'm Stacey Marie Ishmael. We'll be back tomorrow.
The countdown has begun. From May 14th to 16th, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections, gain unique insights, and uncover valuable opportunities in one of the world's most rapidly rising regions. Request your invite for this exclusive event at QatarEconomicForum.com.